shot. He scores! And the Ballers win! Helena is no longer undefeated.
I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious.
Barons win! Barons win!
Cody Jansen stopped 92 out of 95 shots, including a penalty shot in overtime. Somehow he still only wound up the third star of the game.
You like that?
Jansen has a heart.
You're smoking crack!
Okay, World Hockey Report, what's going on? Game three tonight. Oh, yeah, we're out of Denver. Mile High City, Oxygen's back. We'll see what Tampa can do. I have zero faith in them. I mean, if we're just going to start it off with a hot take, this series over, they look like trash. Just got throttled in game two. Okay, my guys beside me here, it's Tyler, Cool, Cody Jansen. We're coming to you live on 12 Ounce Sports, the Hockey Podcast Network. Like, subscribe, share, get this chat going. We'll get to all your comments and everything later. Oh boy, what a weekend though. Game two was an absolute nightmare for Tampa Bay. You wrapped it up in the spaces, Tyler. But before we dive into a preview of game three tonight, also on the show, former NHLer Sean McMorrow, the sheriff's going to stop by, our goalie guru, Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine. And then we want to hear from you. So yes, the chat's going to be important today. Keep it rolling. I mean, T Cool, what's going on, buddy? It's a Monday.
It's a beautiful Monday in Manistee, Michigan. That's why I'm not in the usual Pro Rock Hockey Studio setup that I have. That's why you see a bed behind me. And if you look far enough, there's a corgi butt of a dog that's taking a nap over there. No, yeah, it's a beautiful day here in northern Michigan, the Lower Peninsula there. But boy, is it bad in Tampa right now. Not just the steaming hot, humid weather down there. It's rough right now. Things are a little tense. And you know, the confidence level going into game two, Janner, when we previewed that game on Saturday, on our Saturday edition of World Hockey Report, you know, Matthew Estevez, Steven Ellis, myself, we're all like, okay, Tampa's going to play better. Tampa's going to win. Even our poll said Tampa was going to win. And then the puck dropped in from the get-go. Nothing. There was nothing going on for Tampa. Everything was all Colorado. And we talked about it in the spaces. Colorado is playing unintimidated against the defending Stanley Cup champions. So that's what's making them really great. And I could see Jack Eichel already jumping in the chat, trying to rally back the Bolts. And I don't know, Jack, man, this is going to be a tough stretch. If Tampa can do what they did in the conference finals, awesome. But as we mentioned during the post game, this is not the New York Rangers. Igor Shesterkin, sure. But the Colorado Avalanche on a whole different level. Logan Thompson couldn't even save this team, Jack Eichel.
Well, and a couple of house cleaning notes here as well. John Cooper says Braden Point's going to be a game time decision tonight. And Jared Bednar says Andrei Burakovsky and Nazem Kadri are day to day. We'll see if Abe Kubel draws back in for game three.
Yeah, Burakovsky, I don't think Stephen Ellis said Burakovsky didn't even make the trip to Tampa for game
three.
Yeah,
not on scene yet there. So that's obviously not a good sign.
Broken thumb, possibly. Possibly broken thumb.
There you go. Okay. Maybe you heard it first from
two
Tyler.
Guys are broken thumbs there for Colorado.
Well, there you go. You can kind of play through it, right? Like, I mean, that's
It's easy for us, Janner, because if it's your glove hand, you can kind of play goal with a broken thumb because you don't have to hold on to the stick if it's your catching glove.
I couldn't play goal with a healthy thumb, so don't need to.
Oh, yes. Mr. 92 saves in that intro there, Janner. Come on now. Hey, is that a lucky day or something?
Some of us are here to set records and, you know, stay humble. Oh, man, Jacob's buzzing around. LT would make the Bolts win in four games. Do you see another situation like the Eastern Conference final where the Regs jumped out on the Bolts and Tampa came storming back? Or is that just unfair to say that's even possible against a team like Colorado that is a legit contender?
It's so different. We mentioned, yes, you were going up against the Vezina Trophy winner. Yes, and I don't care if I know it's not been decided yet, but Igor's winning the Vezina Trophy. Morning Skate jumped down in the spaces and agreed with me as well. Three beers deep, but he agreed with me. But I'll be honest with you, this is a different Colorado team. They're much deeper down the lineup. They can skate a lot faster. Their defense is a lot deeper as well than the Rangers. It can happen, and you know, we saw some gamesmanship, but some interesting decisions. Andre Vasilevsky didn't skate today in the morning skate. John Cooper seems like he's trying to keep his number one goaltender rested. Same thing with That's why Braden Point, of course, is a game time decision, because let's be honest, he's shown glimpses of what he was before that injury and why he held out for so long. But I think him resting up is important. But that's why game two is such an anomaly. There were 2 days off for Tampa to rest up, and they looked like they'd been off for either a month or they were playing back-to-back nights. So I don't know. Maybe they can fight off the home crowd there, but it's going to be tough, Janner. Not as easy as it was last round.
What do you think of Darcy Kuemper in game two?
It's so hard to judge a goaltender when he doesn't have to make a whole lot of saves, right? I mean,
sometimes those are the toughest games to play in.
Right. And that's my point. Like, if he gives up like three, then yes, you know, Kemper's the worst goalie in the world. But when you have to make 16 saves in a game, I mean, that's what you should be making on any given night in the National Hockey League if you're an NHL goaltender. So it's hard to say that. I mean, he made a couple nice saves too. He looked better, though, when he did in game one, because he seemed like he was overplaying the puck a little bit. And I'd love to hear when we start talking with Kevin Woodley later on in the show, what his thoughts are. But it seemed like he seemed a little more comfortable. But I really feel like Tampa's going to come out a lot harder tonight. So we're really going to see what Darcy Kuemper's made out of against a deep offense with Tampa tonight.
And Andre Vasilevskiy, he's their guy, obviously. Is this just a case of too much hockey in too short a time or what?
Maybe. I mean, it was, you know, it's, you're playing three playoffs in a row, right? And, you know, and even though it's not like it used to be where you had guys play 70, 75 games a season, sure. But Andre Vasilevskiy, for the goaltender he is, he played more than just about, I'd say, 75% of the league. I'd have to do a fact check on that one, so don't totally quote me on that. But let's be honest, there was a reason why we haven't talked a whole lot about how Curtis McIlhenny was the greatest backup of all time, or, you know, why Louis Domingue, when he was there, was never needed to be a top guy either. I mean, the backup situation for Tampa is a guy dressed in goal pads because of Andre Vasilevskiy. So, and I mean, a lot of us were all thinking, why didn't Vasilevskiy get pulled before the third period? Ray Ferraro, before the second period on the ABC broadcast, literally said, guys, he's not going to come back, right? And then he comes back out, gives up two more goals. So for me, it's more or less, now what's his confidence level here? We don't need him to do a Patrick Waugh like we do with the Canadians back in 90. We don't need that to happen in the Stanley Cup Finals here. I mean, I think he's going to bounce back here. That's why he didn't skate this morning. But au contraire to that first game, I don't, you know, maybe the second, the Cale Makar goal, the one stick side, that second one that beat him six side, you can point at. But let's be honest, Tampa's defense looked atrocious, Janner.
We'll get back to that in a bit. I guess we got our guy on. I've been looking talk to him for a while. Met him in Edmonton. I mean, this guy's an absolute character. I remember him from his playing days. Anyone who loves the old school hockey, you know, respects the absolute hell out of him. Sean McMorrow, former pro hockey player. The Sheriff, making his World Hockey Report debut. What's going on, buddy? How are you?
Well, I'll tell you guys one thing. I am absolutely ecstatic to be on this show, gentlemen. So thank you so much. I really appreciate being on, guys.
Hey, have you been watching
way
some
too
of the...
high, Janner?
We'll let him chime in. Hey, have you been watching some hockey here in the Cup Final? You got a thought on the series so far in the playoffs?
You know what, guys? I have been watching it, but I have to admit, man, I'm still being a sore loser from our Edmonton Oilers being knocked out of the four straight. So I'm still recovering from that. But at the same time, it's a great final. Man, has it ever turned interesting since the 7-0 game? Like, I don't know what Tampa's going to do, man. But if I was Tampa, I would start the five toughest guys and have the first Stanley Cup brawl to try to get back into this thing.
It wouldn't be a bad idea, no question about it, Sheriff.
7-0. You know, come on, you got to do something.
Well, that's when I was going to ask you. You know, Corey Perry was trying to get into it. He's getting into it with Darcy Kuemper, and then he's getting into some melees and whatnot. And obviously, this is a Tampa team that's a lot tougher than what it was 3 or 4 years ago, hence why they had that extra grit that's got them to now three straight finals. How important are guys like Maroon, like Corey Perry in a lineup? And, you know, you mentioned Zach Bogosian as well, another tough customer. How important are those guys in teams that, you know, make deep runs like this?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. They're going to be the most important guys in this next game, because I'm telling you guys, you guys are both hockey guys too. You guys, it doesn't matter what level we're at, guys. If we lose 7-0, there's a lot that comes out. Our souls are pulled out. Our hearts are pulled out. Everything's gone, and it's up to the team to try to repair it. So when you get the role players stepping up, they don't necessarily have to go out there and fight. But if Maroon goes out there and hits everything in sight, and then you know what? The other side is like, holy smokes, these guys are here to play. That's how Tampa's going to actually have a chance to get back into this thing. It's not going to be the most skilled guys stepping up. And no, it's going to be the guys with the most heart that are going to lead this team to get back after that 7-0 defeat.
Sheriff, I love the breakdown. We got a lot of people in the chat happy to hear from you as well. Oh, yeah? What's going on? Kale, City Life, Danelle, everyone's pumped. JD, Jacob's in the chat. What's going on, guys? Sheriff, I got to ask you, though, because you know what we just saw here a month ago? Ice Wars. Unbelievable event. I know we already talked about it. We've had AJ on. We had Diamond Hands on. What was your thoughts on the initial event, though, really? And if you could make one change going forward to the next one, what would that be?
All right, well, you know what? Let's just revise a little bit. So, ladies and gentlemen, if anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, we are talking about Ice Wars International, which is where we've taken an old age part of the game and made it the main event. And it's something that most fans absolutely love. This is prize fighting on ice. I got the opportunity to host this thing. I'm hoping that AJ picks me for Ice Wars 2, which is rumored to be August 6th back at the River Cree Resort and Casino. It's not official yet, but I think it's pretty close, guys. My view on it, guys, is I thought it was unbelievable. I'm a huge fan as well as a former player. And as a fan, man, I was in my glory watching these guys slug it out. I've never seen anything like it. I competed in the last tournament that was similar to this in Finland. And I'll tell you what, man, this Ice Wars is such a big step up from anyone that's tried to start this before. And I'm telling you one thing, Charlie Nama and AJ Galante, they have something extremely special here. And I'm just hoping to be a part of it from now until the end of time.
It was a very interesting show, and no question about it, Sean. Adam Bonilla jumps in there as well, and much respect from an old school fan in Arizona. Adam, our big Yotes fan down there. But it, you know, I remember when this, you know, stuff like this has been tried in the past where they just put it in a rink, right? They just put it in a rink and maybe a spotlight in the middle. But you know, what do you think of like the octagon setup, right? Like the UFC MMA style setup. It makes it seem almost more inclusive having people right on top of the guys on the ice there.
I think it's absolutely incredible. I mean, octagon, we can't technically use because apparently the UFC is...
It's the icegon.
Hey, you can't shoot the messenger here, right? So octagon we can't use, but what I think you just said it. What we are pushing for is icegon. We like the icegon. This is a new sport. This is a new sport, gentlemen. So we're starting all new things, right? Now, the icegon effect, I think, is super cool because there's a different type of feeling, guys, when a person that's competing in combat gets into that ring, gets into that icegon, gets into that octagon. It's a whole other level to step into that battlefield. So that type of effect, I think, brings it a little bit more action than like the last one that I competed in that was in an arena, and it was just kind of the neutral zone center ice line that we were using for the territory, where this is a lot more official. I like the boards. I like it all.
Sean, as someone who's got around 20 pro goals, I love to ask the heavies, who's the best goalie you got to score on?
The best goalie that I've ever scored on?
Who's the goalie who you're like, hey guys, I scored on him, not a big deal?
Well, you know what? I was, you know, he recently retired lately, and I was so proud of him, man, because he's had such a great career. But Ryan Miller, former Buffalo Sabre, you know, I was his roommate on the road for 3 straight years in Rochester, okay? And I would snipe on Millsy every practice. Ryan Miller had no chance against Sean McMorrow. I'm telling the world, Millsy, if you want to come on my show and debate this, it's fine. If you want to come on this show right here, and we can all debate it. But Ryan Miller, that's my top guy. I sniped on that man every morning and morning skate.
Sean, how is that a case? Like I myself, former goaltender, I skated with some pro guys. Why is it some reason the tough guys always seem to have a sneaky good shot? Like Tristan Grant, I'd always skate with Jeff Hogan. I remember Matt Ruckey, who used to be the all-time penalty minute leader in Grand Rapids. How do you guys have such good shots, but you never use in a game?
Dude, because secretly we're really the best players. You know what I'm saying? It's just that our strongest assets are to be the role, to do the roles, to be the tough, rough guys. But really, anyone that watches a pro practice, I'm telling you, you watch those fourth liners, man. They've had to have all that extra time after practice working on our games. Man, we perfected some certain things, but applying it to the games is a whole other story, like you said, my friend. So I'm going to have to learn from you how to do that.
No, I remember. So this would have been, oh man, I'm thinking 2008 when I got the chance to meet Ray Emery. And he was telling me that Travis Mullen, I mean, yeah, RIP Ray Emery, but Travis Mullen had one of the heaviest shots in practice that he had to face. Hey, Sheriff, I mean, we got to ask you, who's the toughest competitor you've ever gone up against, squared up with?
Okay, so obviously that's you know, like a popular question, right?
Yeah,
so
usually how are two fights, right?
Yeah. Usually what I do is I try to break it down because my career was in different stages, right? Like I had my LNAH career in Quebec, which was insane. I had my AHL career, you know what I mean? Then I had my UK career, right? So let's start with the LNAH. Steve Bossé and John Morasti. John Nasty Morasti. Oh, those are the toughest guys in the LNAH, okay? The AHL, my main rival was Brandon Sugar Sugden. You know what I'm saying?
So Brandon
Sugar Sugden, man. That guy was probably the toughest guy in the AHL. Let's put Dennis Bonvie in that group. And let's also put the late Trevor Ettinger, who was Syracuse's Crunch's first. Well, my first year was their tough guy, was my rival. Sugden was 2, 3, and 4. So, and then UK, we got Weapon X, Mr. Alex Penner, and Mr. Brad Voth. There you go, gentlemen. I know that's like seven,
love it.
But
love it.
You know what I mean?
That's awesome. I mean, there's so many guys that are so
and
tough.
Mike Scroy. That's Mike Scroy in the UK as well. Scroyzy. We'll put him in there too.
Because I grew up watching the IHL, right? I mean, any Friday night, if it was Grand Rapids, Chicago, the game would take 5.5 hours, right? I mean, I mentioned Rucky, Daryl Bootlin was another. Nick Bootlin, of course, when he was with Kalamazoo before coaching now. But you mentioned Ray Emery, and like we mentioned, this guy was a legend on and off the ice. Who was, and that's, you know, for us and our goaltending union here, who was the toughest goaltender you either played with or played against?
Well, my toughest goalie fight was definitely Razor. Because when I was playing for listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. When I was playing for the London Knights, Ray Emery was playing for the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. And I swear to God, guys, I was just minding my own business, just in front of the net, just another day, trying to score a goal, just another game for the Sheriff, right? And I get cross-checked, and I happen to fall on top of Razor. And if anyone that remembers Ray Emery, he would not allow anyone to mess with him in his crease. So he just like swings right away. We look at each other and we dropped and he dropped the glove, the catcher and the blocker. I dropped my gloves. We hit each other a couple times. And then, of course, everyone piled in. Right. It wasn't like a Ray Emery, Andrew Peters battle, but it was about half of that.
Did he give you the smile, the evil smile?
Oh, he was laughing the whole time, dude. He was smiling just like he did with Petey. Ray Emery, one of the coolest guys I've ever met, a legend, and God bless his soul, man.
Sean McMorrow, our guest. Okay, he's a big guest today, brought to you by SeatGeek. Use promo code WHR when signing up on SeatGeek. $20 off your first ticket purchase. Sean, this is my last question for you. What was your welcome to the NHL moment? I know you got your cup of coffee up there. When's that moment when you're like, holy, this is the NHL now? This isn't anything else. This is the National League.
Okay, so I would have to say, I mean, I was blessed by being able to play in my hometown, right? So, I mean, Curtis Brown was my roommate on the Buffalo Sabres. This was back in 2003, gentlemen. So, like, I'm, like, really, really old. But anyway, so morning skate, we're at the Air Canada Centre. That's what it was called at the time, the Scotiabank Arena. And, you know, we're in the morning skate. I'm taping my stick. And I just remember some of the refs, the NHL refs coming out and them saying, hey, man, this is your first game, isn't it? And they're like, congratulations, buddy. What are you, 20, 21 years old? Man, you got a long life ahead of you. And then it sinked into me. I'm like, these are going to be the refs tonight, man, the NHL refs. Like, it wasn't like a Carey Fraser or someone, but I can't remember his name. But it just sunk into me at that time that I was in the show. And, you know, and it was a dream come true, guys. Like, it was something that I wanted my whole life. So I'm glad that I got a small taste of it. Cup of coffee, like you said.
Were you able to get the rookie lap, or was that not a thing?
You know what? I didn't get the rookie lap, which I'm very, very lucky, because I'm afraid maybe I would have blew a wheel or something, and that could have been a viral video for the past 20 years or whenever that happened. 20 years ago, right?
That, yeah.
Sheriff, man, thank you so much. Hey, we're going to do this over summer where we can sit down and record a long podcast with you. I know you got your show going on. Where can people find that? Because, I mean, you're interviewing some of the best, too. Love the episode with David Amber. He's one of the best, too. But where can people find your show?
Okay, so on social media, we're simply The Sheriff Podcast. You could find us on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel, The Sheriff Podcast. We also are on Spotify, Anchor, Apple Podcasts, anywhere where you could find podcasts, we're on it. But we also have the video podcast. We're doing a live taping once a week at the Bottom Line Sports Bar in Toronto. So anyone that finds out when we do have a show, just come in. It's 22 Front Street right beside the Hockey Hall of Fame. Woo!
Man, you're crushing it here post-playing career, Sheriff. This has been a blast, buddy. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me, man. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, thanks, Sheriff.
John McMorrow right there. I don't know if anyone has more energy than that guy.
I was about to say, I've only had 3 cups of coffee today, and I'm like 5 behind him, eh?
Post-career, he's crushing it, though. For I don't know, those heavyweight guys that did a job, I have so much respect for them. Oh, man. Oh, the chat's been buzzing. Kale McCarr fans got the jokes in there. Jacob, City Life Project, Joshua, Adam. Man, we're going to get to all you guys, but we got to take a break because our next guest is on the line. Kevin Woodley, our goalie guru, coming up next here on World Hockey Report.
Get ready to win with Billy's Smelling Salts. Billy's Smelling Salts are for gamers, athletes, and competitors alike who want to get in the zone. Us at World Hockey Report teamed up with Billy's, and if you use the promo code WHR when checking out, you'll save yourself some money. The highest quality smelling salts in the game and at the best price point if you use the promo code WHR on Billy's. Billy's Smelling Salts. Get ready to win.
Hockey fans, the pursuit for the Stanley Cup is on, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, has an unbelievable offer for the most exciting playoffs in sports. New customers can bet $5 on any team to win and get $100 in free bets no matter what, win or lose. Looking to turn a small bet into a big payday during playoffs? With DraftKings Same Game Parlays, you can do just that. Create your own parlay by combining multiple bets, like which team will win, how many goals will be scored, and more. It's your shot at an even bigger payout. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Bet $5 on any NHL team to win and get $100 in free bets no matter what. That's code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
It's Stanley Cup playoff time in the NHL, and if you want to save some money on your next ticket purchase, sign up for SeatGeek and use promo code WHR when checking out. It's that simple on SeatGeek. When you use promo code WHR on your first purchase, you'll save $20.
What we do here is go back.
It's World Hockey Report. Cody Jansen, Tyler Cool with you on a Monday, getting you sent for Game 3. Yes, chat, we read you. The smelling salts talk's going off. You got to go to Billy's. Shopbillys.co. Use promo code WHR. It's the absolute best. All righty, our next guest, we've been making him wait here for long enough. Kevin Woodley, our goalie guru from In Goal Magazine, joins us. Kevin, let's start with Darcy Kuemper, a guy who started playoffs I frankly didn't have a lot of faith in. Now with the tandem in Colorado, he's only 2 wins away from getting a ring.
Yeah, and he's doing it despite the fact that Colorado's goaltending, if you look at it on a whole throughout these playoffs, has actually been below expected, like in terms of what an average goaltender should stop relative to the shot quality they're facing. Neither one of those guys are actually above water right now. Out of the 30 goalies that have appeared in the playoffs so far, they rank 22nd and 23rd, Kemper ahead of Francois. So in a lot of ways, it's sort of the Carolina Hurricanes model that we used to talk about a lot in the past. The concept that if you build a good enough team, you can win regardless of goaltending. And I don't mean to, it shouldn't be, it comes across as being critical. Darcy Kemper was really good this season, especially in the second half. Took him a while to adjust to Colorado, and that's a team that doesn't give up a ton, which should sound like a goalie's dream, but the reality is you can end up spending a lot of time sort of sitting there, watch your team play at the other end, and all of a sudden you see a good chance, and it's hard to sort of stay engaged mentally. It's an adjustment. Some goalies make it. Some goalies just can't do it. They're just not – that's a tough environment for them mentally. And it took him half a season to sort of settle in, but in the second half he was really good. Season as a whole, he's flirting with the top 10 in terms of adjusted save percentage, sits just outside of that for the year. So it's not like he's been bad, but in the playoffs – they haven't had to be great, and there's still two wins, as you said, from a Stanley Cup. I kind of look at game two, not just in the Stanley Cup final, but back to the Western Conference final when it was Francois in net, and they dominated defensively, just shut down the Oilers. Like, not a single high danger chance for the Oilers in that game. I think they only had one mid, and it felt a lot like that on Saturday night against Tampa Bay. One high danger chance. One mid-danger chance, expected goals of about 0.55. So, yeah, hey, credit to Francois for the shutout in Game 2 in the Western Conference Final. Credit to Darcy Kemper for the shutout in Game 2 of the Cup Final. But I think they'd be the first to tell you, you know, we hear that it almost becomes a cliche, that's a team shutout. But in both of those cases, it absolutely was. I mean, to take a team like Edmonton in the last round and hold them without a high-danger chance for a game and to do similar to Tampa Bay is remarkable, and a credit to how well the Avs defend, despite being known for their firepower. To me, the job that Bednar has done there in terms of getting that firepower and that offensive skill to buy in to the game plan defensively is the real story and the real reason why they look like the favorite at this point to win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, because it just seems like they're not getting enough chances, Kevin, that being, of course, the Tampa Bay Lightning because of that setup. But, you know, we started off the show talking about, you know, how did Darcy Kemper look in game two? And I honestly said, I'm like, I couldn't really tell you because, you know, I call it the Marty Brodeur syndrome, or if you want to go further back, the Kenny Dryden syndrome, where, yeah, the goaltenders are great. They look good statistically, but when you're only facing 16, 17 shots a game, Kevin, I mean, your job's pretty simple. You have to stop them all in order to make sure nothing happens. But that's what it seems like for this team, because Kemper, I think he played better than game one, sure, but you know, we'll get into the layoff here in a minute. But is it hard for goaltenders to really go back and play in a lesser workload? Because Kemper, of course, was under siege with the Coyotes for all those years.
Yeah, and you know, it's not so much like it's not just the, you know, what are you facing, 16 shots, 17 shots. It's the quality of them. And I think they've done a remarkable job, like I said, of sort of negating the quality. There's a couple points along this playoff run where they've sort of opened it up and got into a bit of a track meet. Obviously the clinching game against the Oilers was back and forth. But for the most part, they haven't had to make nearly as many sort of five alarm stops as the goalie at the other end is asked to on most nights. But, you know, again, like I said, it's not easy. Not every goalie can adjust to that type of environment where they're not busy, where the biggest job they have is sort of staying awake. You know, again, it sounds like it should be a goaltender's dream, but it requires a bit of an adjustment mentally. We've seen Andrei Vasilevskiy went through it a couple of years ago in the Lightning. I mean, the biggest thing for me that separated them from the team that got swept in the first round by Columbus to the team that won the cup the next year was if you look at the underlying numbers, the way they sort of tightened up and cranked things down defensively was just a massive difference. And if you look at Vasilevskiy's season that year, it took him half a year to sort of get up to speed and get comfortable with it. He had to adjust. He's talked about working with a sports psychologist on that and being able to thrive in an environment that, again, it's worth repeating. On the surface, it should seem easy. Like, hey, less shots, that's easy for a goalie. But not every goalie adjusts. And sometimes there's a process. Markstrom went through it in Calgary over the past couple of years, adjusting from being, you know, seeing a ton of shots here in Vancouver to having to go to, you know, more of a shot suppression system in Calgary. Vasilevskiy, for him, it was a sports psychologist and puck handling. A lot of times you will see guys really go to work on getting more engaged with their puck handles, their touches, their communication with their defense. That's a way to sort of keep yourself active in a game and attached and invested and alert, despite the fact you're not seeing shots. We used to see it with Pekka Rinne, did the same thing when they became a shot suppression team under Laviolette. And he struggled when he wasn't busy to find that rhythm and that timing and get those touches. He manufactured them by handling every puck that came behind the net. It keeps you engaged, keeps you mentally sharp, and allows you to sort of not think about the fact you're not busy. Like, if you're sitting there watching the guy at the other end, and I thought Vasilevskiy deserved a lot of credit for this in the Eastern Conference Final, like, Shesterkin's down there stopping bullets in his teeth, and you're basically trying to stay awake. The mind can wander. And if you start wandering to, oh, man, like, he's really good down there, I better make the next save, as opposed to just analyzing where that shot is coming from and playing your game, you get in trouble in a hurry. You start projecting out to the future and start those bad thoughts start, you know, banging around in between your ears. You can get yourself into real trouble. And so it's a process that sometimes it just takes time to adjust, but it's not as easy as it would appear on the surface.
Or else you run yourself into a situation where Mike Smith's caught sleep and Rasmus Anderson's beating him from the other side of the Anthony Hende. We got to talk about Andrei Vasilevskiy not getting pulled in a 7-0 loss, Kevin. Would you have done that? Would you have just left your starter in after all the hockey he's been playing? I know he wants to stay in, but it just seems like now you're burning fuel for no reason.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, and yet, you know, they know the athlete better than anyone else. Obviously, John Cooper, and in particular, Francois, the goaltending coach, has been there for 12 years in Tampa Bay and been a big part of Vasilevskiy and his rise to prominence and the relationship they built working together. So I think you do have to sort of, as much as from the outside, it's really easy for us to say, like, just get him a break, especially at altitude, as busy as he was. Probably... as you know, and people said he struggled in the first game. There's a lot of talk that first period, all the first time he's ever given up three in the first period and all that. Like, I didn't feel that way necessarily watching that game. And I looked at the goals and I'm like, I know the 5-hole goal looks bad and everybody jumped on it as sort of, oh, Andre is struggling. But I'm like, that's a deflection from the slot on an open look. And it was pretty clear. You read the blade, you read the hands, read everything about that release was heading high glove. And so Vasilevskiy's job is to stay patient and react up to it. And it hits, you know, Bogosian's stick and goes between his legs. And everyone's like, oh, what's wrong with Andrei Vasilevskiy? I'm like, nothing. Show me a goalie that's stopping that. And the only goalies that are stopping that are the ones that don't have the patience to hold edges and react to the high shot. The ones that are already defaulting into a butterfly. And if the puck doesn't get blocked, it's going right over their shoulder and routed in for a goal. The fact he was staying patient on that costs him on the deflection. But I don't think, you know, I don't think they're having meetings after that to talk about how to play it differently, frankly. So I didn't see him struggling in game one. Game two, though, that looked like the type of chances that Colorado was creating, and there were a ton of them, had him guessing a little bit, which is very uncharacteristic. He has a very rigid system. When X happens, I do Y or Z. Like, there's very regimented. I sort of moderated a group discussion with Hockey Canada's goalie coaching certification program on Thursday night. And Francois was actually the guest of honor. So we spent about an hour and a half talking to him. And a lot of the talk was on that relationship and with Vasilevskiy. And there's a very structured system that they incorporate, Andre's system of play. And it's designed to remove a lot of the gray area and a lot of the decisions and make everything a very black and white decision. And I just think the type of dynamic offense that Colorado creates, and the lack of execution, I think, by Tampa Bay defensively, uncharacteristically so in that game, had him, you know, a little more in his heels and a little more guessing than I think we've seen to this point in the playoffs. And so sort of resetting will be important for Andre heading into game three tonight. But as far as pulling him, yeah, I'm with you. I would have thought the extra rest would have benefited him. Why leave him in there? And yet they know that, like, that relationship is so strong between Francois and between Andrei Vasilevskiy, they would know. I'm guessing they would have had a conversation in the intermissions at some point. And, you know, rest, yes, but if it's at the risk of upsetting any, you know, like if it upsets him in other ways to get pulled, especially like the timing was odd because we saw the numbers go up like before that game about how he had, you know, how many games he played and the record of 77 without leaving a game, without getting pulled, without having to come out. Maybe they just didn't want it to be a talking point for 2 days between games about Vasilevskiy getting pulled for the first time in his career. Maybe mentally that's enough of a distraction that they just didn't want to make that decision that way. I don't know, but I would trust that they have good reasons for it. And given the strength of the relationship and the history of the relationship there between goalie coach and goalie, I would default towards trusting their judgment on it.
Yeah, just a little bit. I mean, they've only won back-to-back cups. I mean, no big deal, right? Kevin, great chance here for you to plug your latest article on In Goal Magazine, at ingoalmag.com. You're talking about rest versus rust, and we talked about already off the show that Vasilevskiy did not partake in morning skate so he could get some more rest before game three tonight. And it's an interesting piece because you're talking about Pavel Francouz and Darcy Kuemper, because obviously Kuemper had not played since he was injured. Francouz on the long layoff after the sweep of Edmonton. And of course, we mentioned how Vasilevskiy had not a great first game against New York in the last series here. Kind of elaborate a little bit. Don't spoil the article. Folks can go check it out themselves at Engel Magazine. But it's an interesting take because some goaltenders like all the reps, all the work, and consistently going every other day, back-to-backs, what have you. But you know, to some point, some goaltenders like to have the rest. Go a little bit into that.
Well, it was a spinoff, the one at ingoalmag.com. So if people want to read the original article, is actually an NHL.com sort of unmasked column. So they can read that one for free. Ingoalmag.com is obviously subscription only. And then the Ingoalmag one, basically what we did was took the conversations that I had with goaltenders like Jean-Sébastien Giguère, who was, I think he had two 11-day breaks in the 2003 run to the Cup Final, including one right before the Stanley Cup Final. And, you know, how did he sort of overcome that? Billy Ranford, obviously goaltending coach of the Los Angeles Kings, would have had quite a few long breaks during Cup runs with the Oilers after sweeping a series, and how he managed it with Jonathan Quick in 2012 when they had 8 days off, which is what Francouz and Kuemper were looking at before the Cup Final. And then, of course, Eric Comrie, who had a hell of a season this year with the Winnipeg Jets in a role where like some of the gaps between games for him were like just unbelievably how long they were. And so his ability to perform at a high level despite time off. So the In Goal Mag article digs into anecdotes from those guys about how like sort of almost like tips for other goalies, like how you can do that. And the NHL.com article just outlines what the challenges are. And like you said, that it's basically about rhythm. Timing. Every goalie relies on that element of feel to various degrees. I would argue, and we do in the article, that sometimes it's style-wise. Like a goalie who's more just about technique and positioning tends to be better able to manage gaps between games because it's all just about A to B and, you know, track the puck and I'm in my spots. Goalies that play a little more flow, a little more reliance on rhythm and timing, typically struggle a little bit, you know, after having long breaks. And I think actually Darcy Kuemper deserves some credit for, you know, as much as we talked about not seeing a lot of quality in game two, for being pretty good overall in the first two games, despite the fact for him it was a 14-day break. And he's definitely a goalie that plays with a little more flow, a little more reliance on that rhythm and timing. You would think at his size that he'd be a little bit more of a spot-to-spot stationary goaltender. But if you watch him, like there's a lot of extra movement in his game. There's a lot of drift. There's a lot of flow. At times it gets him into trouble, has a tendency to drift out past the edge of the blue paint, despite being 6'5". You know, you can sort of funnel pucks around him that way when you get him sort of flowing out like that on good looks. So there are some tendencies you can take advantage of. But to his credit and, you know, the way they defended in front of him, all that break doesn't seem to have hurt him despite playing a style that I would have guessed going in would make him more vulnerable to the time off and the break between games.
Kevin, you're getting a lot of love in the conversation right now. D, Richard, City Life, Front Row.
Who called him out for having a Carey Price jersey?
Shout out to Vancouver Island, Peninsula Panthers. So popular guest right now, Kevin. But I got a last question for you, and it's because I love the In Goal Magazine podcast. You talk to some of the up-and-coming goaltenders. Love the Strauss man. Love the Dryden McKay one. Who's the guy we got to look out for next year? Who's that guy in your mind that maybe is getting overlooked as the goalie of the future in the NHL? Here.
Ooh, that's a really good question. Let's see how this summer shapes up. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of talk right now about the Florida Panthers and Sergei Bobrovsky. And, you know, to be honest, heard some talk this morning that the Panthers may be willing to eat as much as half that contract in order to move him. So certainly a guy like Spencer Knight, who we've obviously been big fans of dating back to his draft season and what he did at the World Juniors, is a guy that, you know, could get a much bigger role much sooner than a lot of people anticipated if they were able to make a move like that. Although, you know, obviously that's not a secret that Spencer Knight's really good. So I'm not revealing anything there. I haven't really thought ahead to that, to be perfectly honest, guys. Put me on the spot here.
That's what we're good at.
I'm trying to think of Jesper Wallstedt. I'm trying to remember if he signed and he's coming over. That's certainly a goaltender that I want to see in the North American game. My hunch is it's going to be a pretty smooth transition for him, as much as there will be time required in the American Hockey League. I think that he's a guy who's got a game, and we talk about foundations and technique. You know, he's got a very solid technical foundation, and I think that adjustment could be smoother because of that. It's going to be really fascinating to me to sort of juxtapose that to Yaroslav Askarov's transition over to North America. I know it started already. He came over with Milwaukee during their playoff run, but I think there may be even a bigger adjustment required of him to the North American game. As talented as he is, and a lot of the things we talk about with Igor Shesterkin and Andrei Vasilevskiy, how well they move, especially when they're down on their knees. Shesterkin moves as well from his knees as a lot of goalies do on their skates. They're also both excellent skaters. Like, Askarov has some of those properties, especially when he's playing from his knees. Once he's down and, you know, in recovery mode, the quickness, the explosion, the length of the legs, and the ability to sort of get them extended and make extended saves is all really impressive. And yet there are some elements in terms of the hands, and I don't just mean catching or blocking pucks. I mean using the blocker and activating to, you know, steer pucks low with the stick as opposed to letting them kick off your pads and back into the middle, that I think are going to require an adjustment. And so I don't know that I've got a prediction other than I'm really fascinated to watch. There's so many good young goalies coming up. I'm really fascinated to see how these top-end prospects make the adjustment, and also fascinated to see what kind of opportunities they get. I mean, we're seeing a changing of the guard. Does Mike Smith retire? We've sort of seen that generation. Ryan Miller retired. Some of the guys that have been occupying nets and starts for so long, where's Jonathan Quick at in his career? These guys are starting to take lesser roles or even move on. What's that next generation look like? Because we saw this year, it's not enough to have a one or a two. You got to have a three that can play in the NHL and arguably a four. And so, well, a lot of the focus is going to be on Darcy Kemper in free agency. What is it? If he has a Stanley Cup on his resume, does that change his status in free agency? The focus will be on that and everybody's search for a number one. But I think the arms race to have the best number three and number two possible is going to be really intense as well. And you could see, you know, some overpays there. You could see some guys who there are question marks about get one-way contracts. Like, I think the necessity to have more than two is going to create a demand for that second tier of goaltenders. And that's where the game of musical chairs is going to be the hottest once we hit July 13th in free agency.
It's going to be really interesting because the market seems to be pretty hot this year. Last one for me, Kevin. I myself, a little bit of a junior hockey buff. We got the Memorial Cup starting up tonight as well. And coming out of the Western League, the Edmonton Oil Kings, they have one of the top goaltending prospects, Sebastian Kosa. And, you know, I don't know how much you know about the young man, the Red Wings prospect here, but do you think this is a guy that could maybe reach that potential that of being a first-round pick? We talk about Askarov. Pyotr Kochetkov obviously got some time with the Hurricanes here. Can Kosa finally fill that void that the Red Wings have had in goal?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a learning curve there as well, right? Like there is for all young goaltenders, right? The biggest jump, and they'll all tell you this, I've had this conversation with a lot of goalies over the years. The biggest jump is not the American League to the NHL. The biggest jump is from junior college, but maybe lesser so when you're a little bit of an older goaltender. You've had a little more of a chance to play, maybe, you know, whether it's a junior A league or circuit, whether it's USHL or NAHL or BCHL, one of the junior A circuits up here, and then go to college and get even more time to sort of develop and mature as a person as well as a goaltender. So, but junior, major junior to pro, is the biggest jump a goaltender can make. And not, you know, sometimes there's a bit of a transition period. It's what makes Carter Hart's ascension so remarkable. Because it is the biggest jump. It's a tough jump to make. And so, you know, to sort of say that Sebastian Kosa is guaranteed to be the guy in a short period of time, like that might be premature. I like a lot about him. We've had him on the podcast as well, along with his goaltending coach from the Oil Kings, and really love the mindset, love the way they work together, love the attitude, sort of they always looking to get better. Like, there's a lot of things about Sebastian Kosa and his game to love. But I think patience is going to be important there. You know, I don't know that that's going to be a snap the fingers and he's in the NHL within a year or two. I think there's some adjustments at his size that are going to be required. And interestingly enough, I think as the league continues to go to bigger and bigger goalies, like, we're starting to see, like, if you can't move, you can't play, right? And he can move for a big guy, but there's got to be an efficiency and a control within that movement, because those big guys open up holes and the plays have become so lateral, so east-west. Like, you have to be able to move and control those elements to succeed. And it's almost like we've finally seen at the upper extremes of, you know, that search for the big goaltender. You know, I've had it argued by some goalie coaches that if there's an ideal size at 6'3", 6'2", that the guys that are 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", have to overcome their size just as much as the six-footer. The difference is they'll get every opportunity to do so, and the six-footer or the 5'11 guy's got to battle like crazy to get any opportunity. But there is adjustments to be made, and so I don't know that that's going to be a quick adjustment, but I'm looking forward to watching him in the Memorial Cup and following his pro career, because I think it's going to be a good one. I just think there's going to need to be some patience here. Not every guy does what a Carter Hart did. Not every guy can jump over. And we forget, like, the Shesterkins and the Sorokins, you know, they're now – I think by the end of the next year, we'll be talking about them as two of the best goaltenders in the world. Like, Sorokin is not that far behind Igor Shesterkin. And yet we forget that they had a lot of time to develop and mature and to work on their games in the KHL. They didn't just come over here at, you know, 19, 20 years old, right out of junior, and succeed. So that process has to play itself out for Sebastian Kosa as well. I'm encouraged. I think it will. I just, again, pump the brakes, Red Wings fans. Just have a little patience. There's a guy named Nedeljkovic who happens to be pretty damn good. And if your team actually starts playing defense, you'll get to see more of how good he can be, you know, at least in the final year of his contract. And let's see what happens after that.
Nothing fans love more than being told to pump the brakes on a prospect. Kevin, hey, we appreciate your insight, man. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Kevin Woodley right there from In Goal Magazine. I got so many thoughts. And it's funny you brought up Kosa and Carter Hart, obviously both former Fort Saskatchewan Rangers, minor hockey. Hey, we got a lot more to get to. Mem Cup is this week as well. More NHL news around the break. It's World Hockey Report. Cody Jansen, Tyler Cool with you this afternoon.
Get ready to win with Billy's Smelling Salts. Billy's Smelling Salts are for gamers, athletes, and competitors alike who want to get in the zone. Us at World Hockey Report teamed up with Billy's, and if you use the promo code WHR when checking out, you'll save yourself some money. The highest quality smelling salts in the game and at the best price point if you use the promo code WHR on Billy's. Billy's Smelling Salts. Get ready to win.
Hockey fans, the pursuit for the Stanley Cup is on, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, has an unbelievable offer for the most exciting playoffs in sports. New customers can bet $5 on any team to win and get $100 in free bets no matter what, win or lose. Looking to turn a small bet into a big payday during playoffs? With DraftKings Same Game Parlays, you can do just that. Create your own parlay by combining multiple bets, like which team
team will win, how many goals will be scored, and more. It's your shot at an even bigger payout. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Bet $5 on any NHL team to win and get $100 in free bets no matter what. That's code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
It's Stanley Cup playoff time in the NHL, and if you want to save some money on your next ticket purchase, sign up for SeatGeek and use promo code WHR when checking out. It's that simple on SeatGeek. When you use promo code WHR on your first purchase, you'll save $20.
What we do here is go back.
Doesn't quite slap as much as all the small things, Janner.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get away with that one. Copyright may have another say on this. Hey, what's going on? Game three tonight. Cody Jansen, Tyler Cool with you on 12 Ounce Sports and Hockey Podcast Network. We're coming to you live from the Pro Rock Broadcast Studios. The best sticks are the best price by Pro Rock Hockey Sticks. Go check them out today. If you got a question, get it in the chat right now because we got 8 minutes left, and that's all you got to get questions in. We're not going late today. So if you got something, get it in quick. Mem Cup starts tonight. Game three of the Stanley Cup tonight. Huge thanks to Sean McMorrow, Kevin Woodley for hopping on. Hey, what did you take away from Kevin that was that stood out the most to you?
Well, certainly the workload. And that's what I love because, you know, the rust and rest has been discussed, obviously, for teams. But goaltending, I mean, Janner, you and I know, I mean, we played back-to-backs Friday, Saturday, Sundays. But then the difference is, you know, we get the rest of the week off playing junior, high school, whatever, you know, we play growing up. And so, but for the NHL, when you're playing 82 games a year, it's a little bit different. So for a guy like Kemper who hasn't played, and you know, I mentioned this before on the show, I was shocked to see Francois not in the lineup, given the fact that, well, he'd been the guy that recently played. Rust versus rest, but Kemper really came away with it strong there. And obviously, I mean, Kevin, I've heard him on so many different shows before. I love listening to the Engel Pod Mag podcast. I'm still a goaltender at heart. I don't play much anymore because my hips won't allow it. But it's always funny to hear guys talk about stories of how they develop, what they look for, how they play with certain systems. There's a reason why we call him the goalie whisperer, because he just knows certain things that you can't catch in a box or you can't see kind of by if you're just simply watching a game just casually with friends. You have to really look in depth, and that's what makes Kevin and In Goal Magazine, certainly for me, one of the coolest things to always keep an eye out for.
A lot of hot takes coming in on the chat as well. Richard says Talbot for Vezina next season. Jacob Logan Thompson's winning the Vezina next year. Richard Farley, Sebastian Coase is legit. Osber, is Isha on for the game tonight? I don't know. I would assume they're doing a watch along. They always do Hockey Podnet, the best place to watch those. So if you're on YouTube, subscribe today. Adam, will you guys be covering the draft after the Cup Finals? You're damn right we are. Draft.
Yeah, we are. We're going to talk about who gets picked after Shane Wright.
Yeah, we always do those specials. Okay, T, cool. We got a lot of things to get through, so let's keep these answers short here. I know that's tough for you to do. Andrei Kuzmenko signing in Vancouver. Give me a thought.
I don't know. Signings right now are tough to gauge because you never know if they're just going to be signings that, you know, or for guys. We saw the one with the Rangers too. Is it trade bait for a team that needs to offload some cap or whatnot, an extra piece they can add to the puzzle? You know, I think they have a smart group over there in Vancouver now since they fired Jim Benning. So it'll be interesting to see what the Canucks do with him, but you know, he might be there next year. They might need some cheaper guys.
Pete DeBoer's in Dallas. Interesting hire, per se.
Keep bringing the old guys back, Jan, or just keep that train a-rolling. Torts in Philadelphia? Heck yeah. Bruce Cassidy in Vegas? Heck yeah. Let's get it going. Pete DeBoer in Dallas? Sure, why not? Because, you know, I'm sure there's no good coach in the American League or college right now that's qualified to coach in the National Hockey League. I mean, he's a good coach. Let's be honest here. I think there's a lot of cards stacked against him this year for Vegas, and the reason why he got fired is because ownership is a little bit loony over there. A little hot under the collar at times. So, you know, he's got a, you know, an aging team there, obviously a stellar young goaltender. It's not a bad, not a bad pickup though, but I don't know. I'm just, maybe I'm just kind of getting a little sour grapes. Call me some, maybe, dang it. Call me a millennial, Janner. I want someone new to get a job here and see how they do.
Well, it takes a lot of work to get up to become an NHL coach. So
I think he's done a good job, right? I mean, he kind of came out of left field to fill in the role after Dave Tippett got fired. So that's what I'm going.
He's been with
the
team for years and years as an assistant before going down to Bakersfield as a head coach. There was a long process there.
Yeah, hey, good point.
Also, it's a great article by Emily Sadler on Sportsnet right now. It's a great article. It details a really shitty situation with the standing committee for the Canadian Heritage. They're going to be asking Hockey Canada about the 2018 sexual assault and try to determine whether any public funds were used in the settlement. I know if you're down in the States, it might not mean as much to you, but in Canada, obviously, this is a massive story. I know you had thoughts on that too.
Well, it's obviously just given the last 12 months we've been here. I mean, we went to the Kyle Beach story, and obviously before that we had, you know, a lot of player abuse, and, you know, go a couple of years back, we had Akeem Alou. Like the game is not giving itself a good look right now, Janner. And this one in particular, no question about it. A quick wrap up or a quick recap. This is in regards to an event that was held involving the 2018 Canadian World Junior team where a woman was sexually assaulted. Allegedly, these are allegations. Nothing obviously been set in stone yet. Rick Westhead from TSN, who has been doing immense work. I mean, I don't know if there is a Grammy or an Oscar for writing right now, but he'd get it for his investigative work right now. As of right now, as far as we know, allegedly either right now or sometime soon, Hockey Canada President Scott Smith, CEO Tom Rennie, and Hockey Canada Foundation Chair David Andrews are expected to testify, as well as former Senior VP of Insurance Glenn McCurdy. They're supposed to be coming in later around 5:30, 6:30, all on Parliament Hill. According to Rick Westhead, a couple of members of Parliament are expected to, quote, lawyer up. That's coming from Kevin Waugh. He said he doesn't believe any additional witnesses will be called to testify in this case. It's not going to end anytime soon. This is not going to be a quick, you know, done like dinner. But I'm concerned, though, if this is actually true, if that Hockey Canada funds were used to have a settlement, government funds especially, that does not just give a bad look for Hockey Canada, but obviously, you know, Parliament and the government itself, which has certainly gotten some, you know, other criticism over the last couple of years and in this term of this prime minister right now with Trudeau. So it's going to be an evolving story, Janner. I hope it gets over soon. Hopefully they figure it out correctly, because it's just not a good look right now. And the NHL is also possibly going to get involved. They're going to talk to some of the players that were on that team that are in the NHL now. Those names have yet to be disclaimed as well. So, I mean, we could guess, but, you know, no point in doing that until we hear an official report. So still a lot to dive into and a lot to get through before we have any sort of final answer on what this settlement and what with the Canadian Heritage Commission as well.
Well said. And yeah, I mean, using the public funds is a big one right now, especially with all the hot water our government's been in to begin with. Couple other notes before we ended off here. Nashville Predators nearing a sale. No one really gives a damn. I missed this. Beck Mellenstein re-signed with Washington. Great kid as well. Just 760K cap hit. Great guy. The Nick Backstrom news too, the surgery there, that sucks. Like that's probably a career ender for him, eh?
Well, because there's a reason why he missed the first 2 months of the season, because he was injured, right? And trying to get back from something. So when you have one, okay, you can make it back. But when you have two at his age, and yes, you know, Ovi's probably going to keep saying, come on, man, we can do this. We can get me to 965 goals and whatnot. But no, it's such a tough spot to get back from. And man, I wish him the best, but, you know, you almost got to think of what's more important, keep playing or, you know, your livelihood after hockey. Yeah, that's what you really got to consider when you have two surgeries like this.
Mem Cup starts tonight, Hamilton versus St. John to open the tournament. Schwinnigan versus Edmonton tomorrow. Who's your Mem Cup winner?
I'm going with Hamilton. I want to go Sebastian Costa. I love the Oil Kings, love them, cheering for them for a long time, but I'm going to go Hamilton, even though with this three-game round robin, St. John can win tonight and all of a sudden they're a favorite, right? And St. John, let's be honest, has not been as good as these other three teams since they are the host. But yeah, I'm going to go with the Bulldogs. I think they finally get it done this time around.
Give me Edmonton, Sebastian Kosa. I'll ride with them. Hey, game three tonight. Give me a quick prediction score-wise. Who wins?
25-65. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers beat the Denver Broncos. It'll be a great game. I'm going 6-3. 6-3, and I think it's going to be Tampa. I think they bounce back. They get a couple more goals. Kemper gets exposed a little bit. The crowd will be on my wife's in my ear telling me no. And yeah, that'll be great.
There it is, World Hockey Report. Enjoy Game 3. I'll say 2-1 Tampa wins. We get an overtime on this one. World Hockey Report Overtime Challenge, shout out. Okay, we're back Wednesday before Game 4. Enjoy it, everyone.